interpret the phrase that an egg is completed when it comes, when most of it comes out. And we're not sure what that phrase means. So the Gemara, so we offered some interpretation that the first interpretation is really a business statement, and that is, an egg is considered to be of high quality only when it is born from a live chicken and not when you obtain it from a chicken that is already dead. That's one interpretation, and therefore, if you want to buy an egg that is capable of raising a chick, you have to get a fertilized egg that was laid from a live chicken and not one that you got from the chicken after it was dead. Iboy Sema, if you want, I'll give you another interpretation. Mai im yitziyasa nigmara. What do we mean that with the emergence of the egg it is considered to be complete? That just means im yitziyas ruba nigmara. That when most of it comes out, it is treated as laid. The reason this is important is for Hilchos Muktzah. Remember, Hilchos Muktzah basically says, if the egg was laid on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to eat it. If the egg was laid on Erev Yom Tov, you are allowed to eat it. Well, what if most of the egg was coming out before Yom Tov, but then the chicken like jammed it back in? So even though it didn't finally come out till after Yom Tov began, but if there was a yitziah of rove of the egg before Yom Tov, it would be permitted. And that's what Rav Yochanan said, the Amar Rav Yochanan, Beya sheyatza ruba me'erev Yom Tov, if most of the egg emerged, erev Yom Tov, even if it was chazra, even if it went back up, muteres liochla b'yom tov, you could eat it on Yom Tov, because this is treated as an egg that was fundamentally laid me'erev Yom Tov. That's one interpretation. Now, Ika Diyamar, some people interpret the statement exactly the opposite. Mai imitziyasa nigmara imitziyas kula nigmara. It is only considered laid if the whole egg came out. And that would mean only itziyas kula in, yes, itziyas ruba lo. And then it would be excluding Rav Yochanan's teaching that rove is enough. In other words, the statement imitziyasa could either mean rove itziyasa, most of it came out, in which case it would be exactly like Rav Yochanan, or it could mean kol yitziyas, in which case it would be rejecting Rav Yochanan. Okay, but that's a fairly esoteric problem. That is, if most of the egg came out before Yom Tov, and then it went back in and it wasn't laid till the next day, is that called a beya shenolda, or is it not called a beya shenolda? Okay, but gufa. Gufa is always a phrase. Gufa means the body of what we quoted before. This is always a passage we already had before. We learned in a brisa before, Hashochet es hatarnagolas. If you shecht a chicken on Yom Tov, during the week, you shecht the chicken, umatza ba'beim gemuros, and you find inside the chicken completed eggs. Now this has to mean unfertilized eggs, but they're completed eggs. So it says, mutaros liachlan b'chalav. In other words, this is a chiddush, that the concept that eggs are parif, and you can eat eggs and milk, is not only if an egg was laid, but even if you found the egg in the body of a chicken that you slaughtered, I do not treat the eggs as meat, I treat them as parif. But that's what the Tanakhama says. Yeah. But now remember, this is obviously unfertilized eggs. Right. If they're fertilized, there would be a problem of a sheretz, you couldn't eat them. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, Rabbi Yaakov says, not always the case. Im hayu mu'uros begidin asuros. Mu'uros means if the eggs are intertwined in the, literally means in the sinews, but that would basically it would mean that if they're in the ovaries. Of course, they wouldn't be in the ovaries, but if it's being held on, they're about to be released.
In the fallopian tubes, right?
No. This is not. This is past the fallopian tube. If you find an egg that's ready to come out, it's not going to be in a fallopian tube. It's hanging from the ovaries, about to be released to be hatched.
I don't know if chickens have fallopian tubes.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's.
They don't have uteri.
Yeah, but basically, you kind of have, you know, eggs are hanging in. So when the egg is going to be actually hatched.
So it's like on the end of the ovary about to drop into the uterus,
right? But it's still attached. Not the uterus, but whatever it is. The rear of the chicken, whatever, however it comes out.
Loading bay.
Right. But the point is, according to Rav Yaakov, if the egg is still connected to the ovary, it is treated as meat, and you're not allowed to eat it with milk. And he's cholik on the Tanakhama. Right, that's Meura Begidin. Now,
is he cholik, or is he just specifying? He says imara, right? Well, maybe that's the definition of not gemura.
There seems to be a machlokas, because gemura means if it's ready to be detached.
So
even though it's still connected, you can eat it. According to him, as long as it's connected, it's treated as fleishik. Right. Now, you can eat the egg, but
it's fleishik. Because it's on a camera, it's milchig, even if it's connected.
Well, no, it's parv.
It's parv, even if it's connected, yeah.
Even
and he says, no, if it's connected, it is fleishik. Okay, that's a machlokas. Now, we're going to quote another brisa and ask ourselves which opinion would agree with this following brisa. Montana, who is the Tana Laha de Tana Rabbanan of the following brisa that the rabbis taught, that says, Ha'ochel minivlas oftochin. Let me explain the problem here. We're dealing now with a nevela. What's a nevela? A bird that was not shechted. It died by itself.
Yeah.
Now, there is a concept in the Torah that not only are you not allowed to eat a nevela, but if you touch a nevela or you carry a nevela, you are tameh. For one day. It's a tumah of one day. And you cannot enter the Beis HaMikdash or eat korbanos until you go to the mikveh and there's tumas erev, in other words, the sun sets, and then you're tohor. Now, this is true whether it's a nevela of a kosher animal, like a cow, or even a nevela of a treif animal. Of course, the treif animal, whether it's shechted or not, that makes no difference. But if it's a kosher animal, it conveys tuma only if it wasn't shechted. If it was shechted, it does not convey tuma. In the case of a treif animal, if it's dead, whether it was shechted or not. The one exception to this is the nevela of a tohar bird. Tohar means a kosher bird, a chicken, a dove. There, if you touch that carcass, you are not tameh. It's a gezeiras hakasev. You only become tameh if you eat it. Any other nevela, you're tame if you touch it. This is metame you only if you eat it.
I thought you're tame if you move it, if you carry it or something.
You're tame if you either touch it or you move it.
Yeah.
You don't. In other words, if you move it, you don't have to touch it, even if you moved it with a stick.
Yeah.
But if you touch it, you also don't have to move it. So either way, maga or masa.
Yeah.
Now, the question is this, though.
But a bird, you can touch, but you...
That's correct.
But you're not allowed...
Well, you're not. Well, don't confuse two things. It's obvious you're not allowed to eat it because it's a nevela. It's treif. That's obvious. But we're not focusing on the prohibition. We're focusing on what will make you tameh.
Yeah.
What will make you tameh is eating it. Eating it happens to be a sin as well. But in addition to being a sin, it will make you tameh. Mashenke and any other nevela.
But this includes like ducks and geese.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any nevela of a kosher animal.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, any nevela of a kosher bird.
Right.
Yeah. So the question becomes, what is called part of the nevela? So it says the following. If I eat from the carcass of a dead kosher bird, and it mentions the following, min shalal shelbeim, from the collection of eggs, which seems to mean the ovary, min ha'atzamos, or I eat bones, or min ha'gidin, or I eat, gidin are like connective tissues, like sinews or ligaments,
tendons.
Yeah. Or min ha'basor shenitlash min achai, or let's say the bird didn't die at all, but some flesh was cut off while the bird was alive, and I eat that. In all of those cases, I am tohor. In other words, the Brisa enumerates a number of things that are not called part of a nevela. Now, let's start from the last one. The last one is not an avela simply because it was not the flesh of a dead bird. It was the flesh of a live bird. Now, I'm not allowed to eat the flesh from a live bird. That's called basar min achai, but it does not make me tamei.
Eva min achai, right?
Well, it's technically not eva unless you sever a whole limb. If all you cut off was flesh, it's called basar min achai. But that's just as forbidden. Now, the other things are from an avela, but they're not considered meat. Shalal shalbeim. Now, what is shalal shalbeim? So that seems to mean you're eating the eggs themselves. You're eating the eggs themselves. So eggs are not treated as meat. That's what it says for purposes of tumas nevela. Bones are not treated as meat. And tendons, tough tendons, are not treated as meat. Okay, and therefore you are tohor. On the other hand, it then tells me if you eat the eshkol of bayim. So our problem is going to be here. We have two different terms here. Shalal shel bayim, your tohor. Eshkol shel bayim, your tame. Now Rashi says eshkol shel bayim seems to be the flesh of the ovaries themselves. So the eggs are not meat, but the ovary tissue is meat. That's how Rashi
Eshkol
understands
like
it.
Like a vineyard?
Huh?
Like a vineyard?
No, eshkol literally means a cluster. Cluster. Okay. Cluster, like a grape cluster.
Clusters of eggs.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean you're eating the eggs. Rashi says you're eating the tissue, which comprises, you know, which holds the eggs in place.
What Rav Steinsaltz is suggesting, I'm not sure where you got it from, is that the shalal is formed eggs that are still connected.
Yes.
And the eshkol is the ovary itself, including the underdeveloped eggs that would be in the ovary.
Yeah, that would make sense because remember, the undeveloped eggs are clearly treated as meat.
Right.
They're part of the chicken. Okay.
Right. So it's not just the connective tissue of the ovary,
right,
but it's actually the egg within there.
Okay. But the reisha is referring to a complete egg that's attached, and it's saying it's not called meat. Then it goes on and gives some other things. Mina korkavan, if you eat from the bird's crop. Now the crop is basically it's a gizzard.
Yeah.
That's when a bird like a turkey takes food in. So before it descends into the into the stomach, it's kind of crushed and partially digested in an area adjacent to its esophagus, and that's called the korkavan. Is that the pupik? I think so.
What the pupik is?
What's the pupik? Oh, the other end. What are they called? But there's a Yiddish word for the gizzard. I don't remember what the Yiddish word is.
Kishkas?
No, the kishkas is the intestine.
We call it korkavan.
The korkavan. Yeah, you know, they have a big joke about this. You know, it's a joke they tell in the yeshiva world about the fact that sometimes a person learns all the halachas, but he doesn't know what the thing looks like.
Uh-huh.
So they say that there was a shaylin treifas that they brought to a great Rosh Yeshiva, and it involved a hole in the korkavan, in the gizzard. So the Rosh Yeshiva knew all the halachas about this, but he had never seen a korkavan. He says, oh, this is the Halaga Korkavan. This is the holy Korkavan. He's like, so happy to finally see it. He says, that's why I remember that when we're learning Chulin, the third parak of Chulin is very anatomical. It's all the laws of trephos, right, all the abnormalities in lungs and kidneys and brain. And, you know, it's hard without knowing what an animal looks like. That's why the article now has pictures. But that was one of the last volumes to come out. That volume of Chulin with all the pictures. So I remember that Tamima Posey was the daughter of a member here. She's a veterinarian. So she mentioned to me that she was getting all this email from people she didn't even know. All these guys who were learning Daf Yomi, they wanted her to explain bovine anatomy, the anatomy of cows and chickens, to try to see what this was.
Who is this?
This is, her name is Tamima Allen. Do you know a couple, Carl and Peggy Posey? Maybe they used to live here. They live in Eretz Israel now.
Oh.
So their daughter Tamima became a veterinarian. She actually just made Aliyah with her husband too a few months ago.
Well, I thought we could ask her about the how long. The
Well, is we could. I could say send an email, I suppose. She's there in Yerushalayim now.
Yeah.
So what does this say? So it says here the following things are considered meat. the undeveloped eggs. I think that is a good interpretation, because it does resemble an eshkol. It resembles like a tight cluster of little grapes. Min ha-korkavan, the gizzard. B'nei me'ayin, the intestines. In other words, Rashi says that, why is there a chiddush? This is obviously meat. So Rashi makes a chiddush, even though these are portions that were commonly discarded as inedible. But that makes no difference. Even if it's inedible, it's still treated as meat. And then it mentions another one, himcha es achelev. If you took the fat, this is the, it's normally chelev is non-kosher fat, but in a bird, all of it is kosher. So it just means the suet. The liquefied fat, the gamo, in other words, himcha means you melted it down and you swallowed it, even though it's not the normal way of eating it. Tame, you are tame. Okay.
Yeah, but the kurkavan is very muscular.
That's the kurkavan, yeah.
The kurkavan.
Yes.
But it's listed. Oh, it's not listed.
No. There's a list of several. There's kurkavan, b'nei me'ayim, or melting down the fat. The fat of the bird as a whole. Yeah. Now, it does say, though, that if you eat from the fully developed egg, even when it's attached to the ovary, it's not considered meat. In other words, you're not tame. So, man tana, who is the tana that will say, if you eat the developed egg from the ovary, that you're tohor? So Rabbi Yosef answers, it's not like Rabbi Yaakov, because Rabbi Yaakov took the position, as long as the egg is attached to the ovary, even though it's complete, it is considered to be fleshic. So according to him, see, the Gemara is drawing an analogy. The same principle that says you can't eat it with milk would say it gives you the tuma of eating a nevela. In other words, it's important to see Rav Yosef's correlation. Rav Yosef correlates the prohibition of eating with milk with tumas nevela. In other words, if you can't eat it with milk, it's because it's called meat. If it's meat and it's from the carcass of a nevela, it's going to make you tummy. Now Abaya is going to question the comparison. Amar le Abaya. So Abaya says, Mimai, who says you can compare the two questions, right? One question is, if I shecht the bird, is the egg fleshik or milch or parif? The other question is, if the bird dies, is there tumas nevela? He says, the two questions are not connected. Dilma, atkan leikama Rav Yaakov hasam. Why does Rav Yaakov say if the egg is attached to the ovary, you cannot eat the egg in with milk? That's what he said. El inyan isura. When it comes to a shaila of kashrus, iser, is it permitted to eat or not permitted to eat? So Rav Yaakov is machmir on the laws of iser. Avol inyan tuma lo. But in other words, what Abaya is positing is that halacha has certain differentiated categories. And differentiated categories do not have to be consistent in their definitions across the board. Something might be considered meat for purposes of the prohibition of meat and milk, but it may not be considered meat for the purpose of making you tameh when you eat it. And therefore, just because Rav Yaakov says, when you shecht a chicken and you find an egg attached to the ovary, you're not allowed to eat it with milk, doesn't mean when the chicken is an nevela and you eat the egg attached to the ovary, it'll give you tuma. Tuma may be a different definition than regular iser veheter. V'chitema. And therefore, what we're saying is the statement that you're not tamei would even be according to Rabbi Yaakov. That's what Abaye is saying. V'chitema. Maybe you'll argue, what do you mean? Linyan tuma nami nigzor. Shouldn't the rabbis at least make a gezeira? Because after all, here's the problem. If you're telling me if I eat it, I'm not tamei, I'll conclude it's not meat. And if it's not meat, I'll come to eat it with milk. So maybe, even if min haTorah it doesn't make you tamei, shouldn't the Rabbanan make a gezeira that it makes you tamei, lest you come to eat it with milk? The answer is no. Afushe tumahu. That would increase people being tamei. V'afushei tuma midrabanan lo mafshinan. To expand tuma rabbinically is something the rabbis don't want to do. Again, Rashi explains the problem. Of course, this is a generalization. There are many, many, many instances of people who are tamei midrabanan. If you remember, if you learn Maseches Chagiga, some of you learned with me, obviously there are many tumas drabanan.
Touching a sefer Torah, right?
Right, that's right, that's right. But we have here the following. The rabbanan do have a reluctance to make people tamei, because, number one, it's restricting them. It's restricting their ability to eat truma. It's restricting their ability to enter the Beis HaMikdash, etc. And therefore, if you're telling me that min haTorah, it's not considered meat for Tuma, the Rabbanan are not going to want to make a gezeira for it. So therefore, what's the maskana here? So again, the statement in the Braisa that if I eat an egg that is a completed egg that's attached to an ovary, I am not tameh. I am not tameh. So we have a machlokas amoraim. Who does that go like? According to Rav Yosef, that only goes like the opinion that says you can eat it with milk. Because like Rav Yaakov that says you can't eat it with milk, it would make you tameh because it's meat. Abaye says no. That statement that you're not tameh is l'divrei hakol, because even the opinion that says you can't eat it with meat, with milk rather, is strict only on iser v'heter, but on tuma he would be mode, it does not make you tummy.
The fact that it says inyan tuma nami nigzar.
Yeah, nigzar. Yeah,
nigzar.
Yeah.
Could you understand that as saying that by iser v'heter it's actually a derabanan?
That's actually, as a matter of fact, it is. Not because of the nature of the egg, but because even a chicken in milk is midrabanan.
Oh, that's true.
So
right.
Obviously,
yeah.
Any iser on the egg could only be rabbinic, even if the egg is bona fide part of the chicken.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you are correct. It would be derabanan there.
So maybe that's the thing. If it's already derabanan, that the egg would be fleishik.
That could be a simpler explanation. We don't want to make a double gezeiros, make tuma because
somebody tame for something
right.
That was already just a
that the iser itself is drabba.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good pshat too. Now, ika d'yamri. Some people say the opposite. Now, this would depend on the translation, that they focus on the seifa, not the resha. They focus on the phrase. Eshkayel shel bayim tame. Now, of course, if you're focusing on that, then you're retranslating eshkayel. In fact, I'm not sure. According to this, see, eshkayel is now interpreted to mean the developed eggs.
Huh.
So I'm not sure what the first thing meant. And then it says, if you eat the developed eggs, you're tame. And on that, Rav Yosef says, that got to go like Rav Yaakov that says developed eggs that are mura begidin are considered to be meat. The Amrei Mahayu Ma'uros Begidin Asuros. Now, here's the question, though. This is a question that the Gemara doesn't fully express. This is an Ika D'Amri. This is a different version of the discussion. Now, according to this version of the discussion, Eshkel Shel Anavim, the Seifa, Eshkel, the cluster of eggs, I'm sorry, not Shel Anavim, Eshkel Shel Beyim, the cluster of eggs, refers to developed eggs that are hanging from the ovaries. And now Rav Yosef says it has to go like Rav Yaakov, that it's fleishik. And then Abai is going to argue not. So my question is this. If the seifa that says it makes you tameh refers to the eggs that are hanging from the ovary, so when the resha has something that is called shalal shalbeim, that you're not tameh, what is that referring to? You see, in the first way we interpreted it, shalal meant the completed eggs, and eshkel meant the incomplete. Now we're saying eshkel means the completed, and even that makes you tameh. So shalal has to be something, again, it can't be incomplete, because incomplete is going to make you tameh more so, because that's considered to be meat.
Unless you're sitting in those
right. Well, okay, but
and here's the shalal. So
That goes, yeah, the way he draws them goes one way or another.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a helpful picture. But
unless you said that the shalal is one step further, and he's saying the im,
shalal means it's already released.
Well, yeah, sort of like in the
in other words, it's in the it's in the hatch. That's what it would mean. In other words, it's not even Mora Begidin anymore.
Right. So, and the other question. So, if you read that, the Mora Begidin is only going to be an issue on
Eshkol, according to this lesson.
Right.
Yeah.
It's harder to read than the first.
Yeah. Now, according to that interpretation, Rav Yosef argues, it got to go like Rav Yaakov, because what he's saying now is that a completed egg that's hanging from the ovary is meat that makes you tamei, which is consistent only with Rav Yaakov, who says you can't eat it with milk. And now Abaye is going to say that's not a proof, meaning to say... Well, no, it's a different argument. Again, this is a reversal argument. See, in the first argument, Abaye was trying to argue that even if you're strict on the meat and milk, you could be lenient on the tumah. Now he's going to say, even if you're lenient on meat and milk, you will be strict on tumah. That's what he's saying. Mimai di eshkol mehan. Well, actually, he says no. He's defining eshkol. Mimai di eshkol mehanech tetalya bi eshkol. Ah. Who says eshkol means the eggs hanging from the ovary? Dilma eshkol gufa. It means the connective tissue of the ovary itself. In other words, eshkol does not mean eggs. It means tissue. And the tissue, indeed, is going to make you tamei. V'chi tema. And if you're going to ask me, how could you say it's a reference to the connective tissue? Eshkol gufa marla memra. What's the chiddush? That's meat. The answer is, well, look at the other things it mentions. It mentions intestines, and it mentions the gizzard, and the chiddush there is, even though it's not so edible, well, people don't eat ovary tissue either. But it's meat. It's like the gizzard and the intestines. The avogav de basar nino, even though it's meat. Kivin diika inshe de lo achli, since many people do not eat it. It's strictly ashmin, it has to teach me this. Hachanami, so the same thing by eshkel. Kivin diika inshe de lo achli, since many people do not eat ovary tissue. It's strictly ashmin, it has to teach me this. So again, in other words, Abaye's answer here is very simple. Abaye says he does not accept the definition of eshkel as referring to eggs that are Mu'ura Begid. Okay. So now we have a little bit of reproductive information that a zoologist could take into account. Again, the question is, some of our observations do not fully correspond with this, but let's see what it says. Tana Rabbana. Kol shetashmisho bayayin. Any animal that has intercourse exclusively in the daytime. Certain animals apparently mate only by daylight. They do not mate at night. Nolad biyom will only give birth in the day. If the intercourse is day, the birth will be in the day. Kol shetashmishay belayla. Animals that are nocturnal in their mating habits, they only mate at night. Nolad belayla, they will give birth only at night. Kol shetashmisho bein bayom uvein belayla. Any creature, like human beings, that can have relations in day or night, nolad can give birth bein bayom belayla. Now, this doesn't mean, by the way, that only if you had relations in the day. It means if you're a creature that can have tashmish bayom or belayla, you will give birth bayom o belayla, regardless of whether you had tashmish bayom o belayla. So even a tashmish bayom could give birth belayla. A tashmish belayla could give birth bayom. Now we're going to give an example. Kol shetashmisho bayom, nolad bayom, zu tarnagolas. Okay, again, I have no idea, but it basically says...
Is nolad the hatching? Or
nolad is the laying of the egg.
Okay.
That eggs are laid in the day. Eggs are not laid at night. You're going to see this has a halachic significance as well. And therefore, since chickens, roosters, and hens copulate only in the daytime, a hen lays an egg only in the daytime. And then it says, "Kol shitashmishay balayla nailad balayla zu ataleif." Ataleif is a bat. That's right. Bats are only at night. "Kol shitashmishay bein bayayim bein balayla." That's adam. That's a human being. "V'chol de damilei," and other animals that have the same habits. Now, we're now going to say, why is this important? An important bit of data to know. Is there any halachic significance to this?
No.
So actually, there is. Amar Mar, the master said, "Kol shitashmishay bayayim, nailad bayayim zu tarnagolas, l'may nafkamina." What's the difference? The Gemara's answer is, "Licht Rav Mari berei de Rav Kahana," based on what Rav Mari, the son of Rav Kahana, taught us, "the Amar Rav Mari berei de Rav Kahana, badak bekina shel tarnagolim may erev yamtiv." Let's say I checked the nest of the chicken, right? The nest of the chicken on Erev Yomtiv, v'lo matza ba'beya, and as far as I looked, I couldn't see any egg there. Ulamachar, but the next morning I get up before dawn. Let me explain this outside. Here is the problem. If an egg is hatched, is not hatched. If an egg is laid before Yomtiv, you can eat it. If it's laid on Yomtiv, you can't. Now, let's imagine I check the egg Erev Yomtiv, I don't find an egg. The next morning, I get up 4 o'clock in the morning while it's still dark, and I find an egg. Now, it would seem, based on logic, if I didn't find the egg yesterday, and I find the egg 4 a.m. in the morning, it must have come out now, and therefore it would be an egg that's laid on Yomtiv. The answer is no.
Yeah.
Since chickens do not lay eggs while it's night, and when I'm checking and I find an egg, it's still nighttime, it must have been laid the day before. Well, and then what may have happened was, like Rav Yochanan, in other words, it must have been coming out and then it came back in, or whatever it would be. This is an amazing thing. This bit of scientific information is treated as so reliable that even if I did not find the egg Erev Yomtiv, we assume that it had been there.
Wow.
Now, that's not going to work, however, if you check the chicken coop on Yom Tov after the sun rises. Because then, maybe the egg came out then. Okay? Martak asks the Kasha, that if I check the nest of the chicken on Erev Yom Tov and I didn't find an egg, and the next morning I get up before light, this is before light, and I find an egg, that egg is mutter because it was laid the day before. So the Gemara asks the Kasha, how can you possibly make that assumption? Halo Badak! The guy checked Erev Yomtiv. It wasn't there. The answer is, Eima loy Badak Yafa Yafa. Number one, we assume that he looked quickly, he didn't check it properly, and it was there. And then it says, and Afilu Badak Yafa, and even if he checked it very thoroughly, Amar Yatsaruba, I assume that most of it came out and then went back in. So apparently the second coming could be even at night, but there must have been the first coming. V'chazra Havoi. And then it went back, like Rav Yochanan said before. Okay. But then the Gemara says, is this halacha even true? Eini, is this din true? V'ha Amar Rav Yesi ben Shaul Amar Rav. Badak bekina shel tarnagolas me'erev yomtiv. Exactly this case. I checked the nest of the chicken before yomtiv. V'lo matzah ba'beya, there was no egg there. Ulamachar hishkim matzah ba'beya, the next morning I checked. Oh, I'm sorry. The next morning means before night. But I'm sorry. Before daybreak. Before daybreak, I find an egg. We say it is usher. Right? Directly contradiction. So the Gemara's answer is that there is an exception here. That is, Hasam b'desafna me'ara. So now we're introducing a major qualification. The statement that a hen will normally not lay eggs in the day is normally true. One second. Yes, safna me'ara literally means it rubs against the ground, meaning it gets sexually stimulated by rubbing against the ground. And in such a situation, it is capable of laying an egg even at night. So the Gemara says, well, wait a second. If that's the case, then any chicken could lay at night. So when would ever be mutcher? Ihachi Rav Mari Nami. How could Rav Mari say it's ever mutcher? Ema Meyara Safna. It rubbed against the ground. The answer is B'di'ika Zachar Bahada. That when the hen has a rooster, it does not stimulate itself in that way. But then the Gemara says, why not? B'di'ika Zachar Nami Ema Meyara Safna. Amaravina Gemire. We have a tradition called Hecha Di'ika Zachar. If the hen has a mate, has a rooster, Lo Safna Me'ara, it does not rub itself against the ground. Which means to say that in such a circumstance, therefore, it will only lay eggs in the daytime. So the chilek basically is an empirical chilek, and that is, when hens have access to roosters, they only lay eggs in the day. When they don't have access to roosters, they might even lay eggs at night. And then we're even given a helpful answer. What is considered to be proximity of a hen to a rooster? In other words, how close must a rooster be to be treated as a potential mate? V'yad kama. How close? Amar Rav Gamda Mishmei Derev. Kol Hecha Deshama Kala Biyamam. If the rooster is close enough that she could hear his crowing even in the day, because night it's quieter, then if she could hear the rooster's crow, I assume if we could hear it, she could hear it, then that is enough to make her feel she has a mate, so to speak, and she will not be Safna Me'ara. And how much is that? So Avad Rav Mari Uvda Ad Shishin Bati. Rav Mari actually paskened this leniency within 60 houses. That means he held. Remember, the leniency is if there is a rooster in the neighborhood, we consider the egg to be only in the day, and therefore if you find it before daybreak, it was an Erev Yom Tov egg. Even if the rooster was within 60 houses of the chicken, of the hen. However, it says, Iika Nahara, if there's a river dividing the hen and the rooster, then Lai Avra, we don't assume the rooster is going to cross a river, or the hen, right? That's going to be. However, Vihika Mavra, but if there's a bridge, Avra, okay, chickens will cross the bridge. That's the source of the chicken joke, right? However, Iika Mitzra, but if it's a rope bridge, a very unstable rope bridge, Lo Avra, the chicken will not do it. But then we're given a little parenthetical note. Havei uvda, but there was a maisa v'yavra amitzra, that a rooster to get to a hen, or a hen going to a rooster, I'm not sure which one, actually crossed a very treacherous rope bridge across water to mate. Okay. All right, maybe we'll stop here.
By the way, the reason...
Oh, I'm sorry, let's go a little further. There's a two dots here. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I'm on batteries.
It's the reason why they do keep lights on all night in chicken coops.
Ah, that's interesting. In other words, it's understood
they
that
them to think it's,
it's actually understood that they don't lay eggs in darkness.
Right.
Very interesting. That's very interesting. I guess we have to see, though, given the fact that most hens are kept away from roosters today, then l'chara, according to the Gemara, they would lay an egg at night because they're safna me'ara. Let's just try a few more lines because we'll finish this sugya here. Okay. Now, b'mayu kimta b'desafna me'ara. So b'mayu kimta. With what have you established the chumrah, right? The chumrah says that if you find an egg before daybreak, the egg is going to be usher. Why is the egg going to be usher? Because if there's no rooster, we say the chicken got stimulated by the ground and laid the egg at night when it's already Yom Tov. Well, if so, my Irya Badak. Then why does it say, see, it's mashma from the Braisa that the reason the egg is usser is because you checked on Erev Yom Tov and you didn't find. What if you didn't check at all? at least it's going to be a suffix if I find the egg before daybreak. It may have been, in other words, maybe it was Erev Yom Tov, maybe not. It's going to be usher me suffix. In other words, you don't need the circumstantial evidence that you actually saw there was no egg. So the answer is, what are you going to say? If you didn't check, you could give yourself the benefit of the doubt that the egg was there yesterday. Well, even if you did check, you have the benefit of the doubt that most of the egg came out and went back in. Meaning, what is the difference going to be between checking and not checking? So the Gemara's answer is that this Braisa considers Rav Yochanan's scenario of most of the egg coming out as lo shachiach, as something that's totally implausible. Therefore, we have the following. If I find an egg before daybreak on Yom Tov, if I didn't check on Erev Yom Tov, I am permitted to give myself the benefit of the doubt that it was laid yesterday. If I did check, I cannot give myself the benefit of the doubt, because if I didn't find an egg, the only way it could have been yesterday is if it came out and went back in, and that we consider to be an unreasonable possibility. Masha ain't came when the egg is when the hen is exposed to a rooster. It is so improbable that it would lay an egg at night that then I say Rav Yochanan. In other words, I only use Rav Yochanan's idea when otherwise I'd be contradicting that scientific reality. But in a situation where the egg could be a day or a night egg, I'm not going to attribute it to the day before based on Rav Yochanan's unusual situation, which is why the egg is going to be usser. Okay. And then the final thing seems to be unrelated, but it's just another statement of Rav Yossi ben Shaul. The Amar, Rav Yossi ben Shaul Amar Rav, Hai Tuma Shechika. Tuma is the Aramaic for shum. So shum is garlic. Ground up garlic, even ground up garlic, is sakanta, it is dangerous, legiluya, to leave it exposed. So let me explain the issue here. There's a whole machlokas if this halacha even applies today. And that is, there is a halacha that you are not allowed to leave liquids unexposed, or liquids exposed without watching them, let's say on a table. And the reason that's given seems to be a little far-fetched in our society, and that is, snakes would come and drink the liquid, and they would put venom in the liquid, that if you would drink the liquid, you could be poisoned. Mm. And that's why liquids had to be covered. Now, there are some poskim that say that since Bizman Hazeh, at least in our climates, we don't have snakes that do this, so therefore you could be makil. Other people, the Golden, for example, says you have to be very strict. Now, this is a law that only applies to liquid. It does not apply to solid. However, certain types of solid foods have kind of a liquid-like consistency. And therefore, what he's mentioning is chopped up garlic is treated as a liquid, and therefore to leave it exposed would run the danger of the nachash, putting eris venom into it. Okay, let's stop.